And now, from the Fortress of Solitude, deep beneath the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, SciFiForMe.com presents The Rogues Gallery.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of The Rogues Gallery. We are discussing the DC Comics on-screen, television, and film. Quite a bit to unpack this week, but first of all, let's introduce everyone online from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Ann Labs.
Good evening.
And Dave Margosian.
Hello.
From across the state, Catherine Sanders.
Hello.
And down in Fort Worth, Texas, Mr. Jeff Hackworth.
Hello, hello.
Tim Harvey is here as well on the phone.
Hello there.
And here in the studio, Dustin Adair.
Hey there.
And Kendall Sin is doing a father-daughter dance, so he is not here. My name is Jason Hunt. And I actually managed to see all of the episodes this week.
Wow.
And I caught up on Gotham from last week. So I watched last week's Gotham, this week's Gotham, and all of the other shows.
You are a glutton for punishment.
At the same time, was it?
No,
well, I did watch the two Gothams back to back just to get them out of the way. I did survive.
Playing with fire there.
I know. I tell you.
I didn't watch any.
It'll drive you mad.
It's a short drive.
Yeah. I didn't watch anything but Supergirl again. I don't. Yeah.
So okay. Now let me ask you: Why don't you watch any of the rest of it? Is it just a time thing, or is it an interest
mainly, it's, there's just too many shows. It's too many shows, and there's only so much Dustin to go around. And you know, I have to devote myself to other things, like you know, rearing children and trying to have sex with people
and a job
and a win. And so, like, you know, I can only watch... I did watch four episodes of Stand Against Evil this week.
Yeah.
That show is silly, but it's not DC. It's a ripoff of Ash versus the Evil Dead, right. So that's enjoyable.
Yeah, we actually, we had L. Latham out in L.A. was at the premiere screening for that when they opened it up out there. So those of you who are listening, if you're interested, you could go check that out at scififorme.com. That was a good way to get in a plug. There you go. Okay, so we've got five shows to discuss. Arrow, Supergirl, The Flash, Gotham, Legends of Tomorrow. And for those of you who are paying attention at home, we've got a slightly new format on the website entry for this, because up until this week we've been doing individual recaps that we've been posting for all of the different shows. I'm consolidating all of those, so we're going to have the write-up for all of the shows, little mini recaps, and this podcast all together. So if you're just listening through iTunes or podcast.com, if you want, you can go to scififorme.com and get recaps all together in one place along with this podcast. So we're just going to kind of pack it all into one box from now on. Make it easier. So, first of all, Sidekick.
All right.
Because Dustin came in a couple of weeks ago and said, everybody needs to watch this.
Yeah, it's made by the guys.
Yeah.
Like the guys that make the thing that's got the lady in it from that whatchamacallit. And
Josh Dallas from Once Upon a Time.
Yes.
And Prince Charming.
Prince Charming. And then we have Emily Beck Rickards, who is Felicity on Arrow.
Yeah.
And Tom Cavanaugh, who plays Harrison Wells, all the various different Harrison Wells on The Flash.
Right.
And they, I guess, shot this in Vancouver.
An obnoxious little kid. And did anybody else watch it? Has anybody else seen this?
That was the homework. Everybody should have seen it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I just, you know, because it's not necessarily officially DC, but it's made by all them guys. So I thought we would just discuss it and see what we thought about it. What did we think about it? I have a thought, but I thought maybe let everybody have a thought before I thought thoughts.
I thought they were heading for a big divorce angle, but then...
Yeah.
I kind of thought divorce too at first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I really liked the way. Does anybody want to describe what this thing is?
Anyone,
why don't you go ahead? You brought it to
us. Sidekick is a family. They're in the midst of some drama. And so the mother tells the father he has to explain what's happening and I'm not going to spoil the drama because that's a big thing. For people who might want to watch it, the mother says to the father, "You have got to explain what's happening to our kid." And so he does by making it into a superhero bedtime story about a superhero whose whole job is protecting the damsel in distress from this evil monster, and how the monster kind of gets the better of them at one point. And it's, you know, I liked it. I felt the feelings I feel like I was supposed to feel, but I've always had a problem with, you have got to take care of your mother now. I know you're only 7, and I shouldn't be putting the burden of taking care of your mother, who's apparently just an emotional basket case and has no other emotions.
Okay, I'm on it.
Yeah, like, I wish that it could have been... You know, I wish we could get away from the damsel in distress thing, especially.
Yeah, me too. That was my thing with it.
The thing that bothered me is that the types of relationships they had were so different. One is an adult, and then you transition a child into that. I don't know. Maybe I was reading too much into it.
I felt the exact same way. That,
oh, good.
the hero protects the princess. The hero, something's happening to the hero. Now it's the sidekick's job to protect the princess. The princess has no agency of her own. Princess never steps up to protect herself.
Mm-hmm.
That's not,
well, except on this particular one, though. I mean, I would agree with you in general, just on principle. But since this particular one was geared toward putting the kid in the mental state to basically not really so much the fact that you've got to protect your mother, it's you're going to have to step up because I'm going to be gone.
Right.
And that... It was, to me, that was a good twist on that story, because I thought divorce too, up until the point where it was, you know, when the hero is going to die, I thought, well, wait a minute, that's not just that, we're talking about something different other than divorce now. And then it became, when, you know, it became clear that he's dying, you know, the kid's got to step up. I can see the damsel in distress in this one because it's a kid's story,
right?
And it, you but know, again, he's trying to keep everything really in perspective for the kid to be able to say, "Okay, I have to be,"
but
more.
But you don't put that burden on a child. That is psychologically damaging.
Well, he's also trying to explain it in the way the kid would understand.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know,
and it was just a story.
Well, except, yeah, but it was a metaphor
right.
for what they were going through. So, and by the way, Mick Rory knows what a metaphor is. We'll get to that in a little bit. But that's not a non sequitur. We'll get to that. But I can see your point. But
and also,
this is one of those, you know, it's a trope.
Yeah,
it's something that we've seen before.
Well, and also considering who it came from, the staff that created it, it just feels like that's putting a tired that's a group of people I would not expect to be putting out.
Well,
such
see,
a
I
tired
didn't recognize
trope.
I didn't recognize any of the names on the crew. It was just some of the cast. I mean, they're clearly up in Vancouver, but it wasn't a Berlanti thing.
I thought the writer was a. Oh gosh, was he a Flash writer?
It.
I think that the Flash or Arrow writer wrote it.
I'd have to look into it because I didn't notice. But
anyway,
but you know, no, I get what you're
I liked
saying
it.
About it.
I hate it, you know, you gotta you know, it hit you in all the buttons. It hit all the buttons for me.
Yeah.
But
it was pretty good for what it was.
Mm-hmm. It gets you in the feels. Well, and what it felt like was. You know what it reminded me of?
Mm.
is here in Kansas City, we have the Independent Filmmakers Coalition,
yes.
which is a group of people at various levels of experience who get together to make short films. And there's a project here in town called The One Night Stand, which is a 10-hour timed film competition that basically you get the team together that morning, and here's the stuff that has to be in the spot, and go make the movie, and we screen it that night. And this short film here, Sidekick, felt a little bit like one of those, like a 48-hour film or a 10-hour film competition where it was just, you know, hey, we've got this idea. Let's just throw this thing together, and we'll just go and just go make something.
Yeah, the writer is a gentleman named Jeff Cassidy, and he works on The Flash.
Okay.
So he's not a writer. What is he? I think he might be a film cinematographer or something. What does he do? Anyway, he works on The Flash. That's how he got all them people.
Right. Well, and you know, it's nice to be able to do that kind of thing where, like, hey, let's go make a movie. It's very Andy Hardy, you know, Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland, you know, putting on a show in the barn type of thing where you've got, of course, it's a much more expensive barn with more resources.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised at how big that crew was for the film that we got.
The special effects were very good.
Oh yeah,
yeah, they were. Yeah, I liked them.
And I didn't dislike it. It's just
I didn't dislike it. I just felt like it just had that tired trope right in the center of it. That
so it wasn't ambitious enough for you.
Yeah, maybe. I would have.
Oh.
but see, here's and I, as a writer, I get irritated by these simple little things. Like it wouldn't have taken anything. It would have taken. And for the story to go like this, and he had a sidekick, and the sidekick came to help, but the princess also knew she had to step up and be strong too.
Right.
And then instead of this child, a child having to fight the villain by himself,
mm-hmm.
the child and the princess, sidekick and princess,
work together
to fight the villain and save the day together.
Ooh, yeah. That would have been nice.
That's all it would have taken. It could have been
just a couple of extra lines,
and to make a pink latex costume for that lady. That's all it would have taken.
Yeah, well.
But do you think this is more like a teaching tool to help kids
come
to grips with that sort of thing?
Again,
that would be
a
good story.
Because it's. I have my kids I adopted from foster care. And so before you do that, you have to go through about 6 months of intense classes on parenting. And stuff. And one of the things that they talk about is that almost in every case of a child coming into foster care, the older child has been parentalized.
Right.
And what that means is that that child, my daughter Trinaya, who's been on this podcast, she feels a very, very intense responsibility towards her younger brother and sister.
Almost like she's had to become a parent.
She's had to parent them.
Yeah.
She has lost a part of her childhood. She's 9. She's lost a part of her childhood to this idea that she is responsible for her brother and sister who are so. And there's steps that I, as her adopted father, have to take. Every once in a while, I have to pull her aside and be like, dude, you are not their mother. I am the parent. You are the kid. How about you act like a kid?
Yeah.
And stuff like this you're the man of the house now stuff, while, you know, beautiful and touching and like this weird way that hits people forever, has always hit people, is psychologically damaging to children.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to get out of my stepmother and biological father's house because they kept making me feel that way towards my siblings because she wouldn't take care of them. So, and my father was always working all the time. So I was like, no, you know, as a 10-year-old, I was like, no, this isn't happening. And I didn't have to legally stay with them. So I didn't.
Right. And so that's the only, I know it's a trope, but again, it would have been such an easy fix to make it, I think, a much more positive message, and not putting this burden, what is a burden, on a child, in my mind.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel the same way.
But anyway, other than that, I did tear up. And then I loved how the ending was a little bit ambiguous, because I felt like when they called the kid into the oncologist's office,
mm-hmm.
I felt like there was a little glimpse of a smile there on the dad's face.
Like maybe
it was good news.
Maybe.
You know, maybe, you know, so I like
that. Or at the very least, they're all in this together.
Yeah,
as
they're
family.
All in this together now. He's yeah.
We don't have any more secrets.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, so that was Sidekick.
So that was Sidekick.
If you want to watch it, go watch it. If you don't, we've told you almost everything about it now, even though I didn't want to spoil it.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
Well, and we will link to it, so we can make it easy for people to find it over at scififorme.com.
That's okay. A place where things happen.
That's a place where things happen. Yes. Okay. So next. Gotham.
I am the law. Place where lots of things happen.
Lots of fabulous hairdos this week, too. Oh, my God.
Yes. Well, even on that one cop.
The woman
she was like, wait.
The guy was talking to at the beginning. She had this weird half updo.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. Oh, I loved it.
It's like something out of the Jetsons.
AKA after Jim Gordon gets shot by Barnes.
Mm-hmm.
And he has that graze on his face, and then when he's talking to Lee, the graze is gone. And then when did he get shot by Barnes? Back on his face.
I didn't even catch that he'd been shot by Barnes.
They both shot at the same time. They both shot each other.
Oh, right.
Everybody Gordon gets nicked everybody. On the side of the face. It's there 1 minute, it's gone the next minute, it's there again.
Well, the fact that it kept disappearing, I never even caught the fact that he'd gotten hit at all. I didn't even
me
catch
neither.
That.
Yeah.
No. Well,
maybe it's because I was watching it on my laptop.
Oh, it could be. It could be also the fact that it's a terrible show and it's extremely inconsistent.
It could be that too. I will freely admit it's terrible, even though I enjoy watching it.
Oh, it was fun terrible this week. Mm.
It's a Gotham pun.
What?
Grayson.
Okay. Yeah. That's we were actually discussing. I
didn't say it was a good Gotham pun.
Yeah, we were talking about puns earlier with my son and I were talking about puns earlier, and he says, it doesn't have to make sense. Like, yes, it does. That's what makes it a pun.
He said, well,
if it doesn't make sense, it's just funny. It's just not a good pun. I was like, no. Puns have to make sense to be funny.
Did anybody else notice that this is the same world where somebody can talk about people have cell phones because they were talking about the last number being in her cell phone before she got killed for a Kim Novak. And then I swear to God, I saw an IBM Selectric in the police station.
Well, hey man, and that's them. And Tim, you could probably speak
2040.
Well, yeah, well, Tim can probably speak to a little bit on the production design because it has been from the very beginning deliberately ambiguous as far as the time period for the show.
Oh yeah, well, and as much as I think it's just a train wreck of a show, and I gave up on it. In the middle of the first season, I didn't even make it to the middle of the first season. But I've actually the production design for the show is actually really pretty good. And although the problem is that a lot of people run into when they're trying to give an ambiguous time period is that we're so used to identifying. Especially the folks who are like our age group, right? The folks who lived through the changes in technology from computers and phones and all that stuff. We're so used to actually identifying periods of time by the technology that goes with it and the cars that go with it and things like that.
Yeah.
That it can be really odd to watch shows when they get, you know, they're not locking into a time period. We're kind of wired that way to recognize this is the 70s, this is the 80s, this is the 90s. And so that's kind of weird. But no, the production design for the show, that's never been the problem with the show.
No, of course not. No.
Production design's always been fine. It's the writing. It's terrible.
Well, what's going to happen now that Lee got cast on another show?
He's going to say that he loves her, and she's going to have to go away for reasons because she doesn't love him still.
She'll remember what train she left the baby on.
And then the show will get canceled, and it'll be a cliffhanger.
Exactly. She'll say, I have to go back to my home planet. And then there will be an end card that says Lee was killed on the way back to her home planet.
The trope is called being put on the bus.
Where they
put you on the bus and they send you out of town for reasons. And they're never seen again.
Yeah, but they do that. That's like a better one, so that, you know, just in case you want to have them come back for like little things. Here
you don't kill them off. You allow for the possibility they could come back. I don't. It's an NBC police procedural, I think, isn't it?
I know she's leaving Gotham for that. Ugh.
Or some legal drama or something.
Well, I think that's like the safest bet anyone's ever made for career like longevity. Because NBC's police procedurals, there's not a single one that hasn't been on for 40 years.
Oh, I know.
True.
So, like, if you get cast on an NBC police procedural, it's like, buy a house.
It is a legal drama. Let me get here and punch a couple of buttons here. It is this is an article from Deadline, a legal drama starring and executive produced by Marina Baccarin, Tony Krantz, and Flame Ventures, ITV Studios America. Don't want the ad for the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. Thank you. Baccarin, currently on Gotham, she'll leave the Fox drama as a regular only if her NBC project goes to series, in which case she will continue on Gotham as a recurring. Got a script commitment. It's described here on Deadline as The Good Wife meets The Wire.
Okay.
Wow.
She's a former police officer turned high-powered attorney who navigates the ever-changing landscape of New York City politics, law enforcement, and the justice system, all while juggling a complicated personal life.
Of course, because it's a
female lead, you have to have that, right?
And she can't do one of two things. She either cannot cook, or she cannot walk in hills.
Now, this is an interesting twist. The law firm defends New York police officers in a wide range of cases. Mm-hmm. That's new.
So every week she's going to be defending another police officer. It's going to be just police be doing things. Maybe not. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't.
Yeah.
Plus she has to film Deadpool 2, so, you know.
Well, we'll see.
I thought Ryan Reynolds was all about Deadpool having a boyfriend in Deadpool 2.
Well, he talked about it. Ken Sanzel, the showrunner,
director fired.
He said it's an opportunity to look at the hot button issue of police misconduct from a realistic and less dogmatic point of view, examining cops as human beings, sometimes right, sometimes wrong. Too often victims of the NYPD's Byzantine internal politics. So it's going to be a cop soap opera.
Oh, boy.
That's what they all are. Right. That's what
they
are.
We have never seen before.
I know, right? The cop community relations. Yeah. Sarcasm.
Well, I think it's interesting.
That was Gotham.
That wasn't all of Gotham.
Not all of it. Yeah, I mean, because we got resolution on Barnes's arc.
Mm-hmm. Judge
Dredd went to jail.
Yeah, he was really starting to act like Judge Dredd.
Yep.
Well, I am the law. I mean, that's a little bit blatant, but
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Little too on the nose.
No.
We have to talk about Ivy stealing that key
candy bar in a emerald.
Yeah, she got a necklace. And of course, figured out that she's in trouble, and now they're being chased with guys with crossbows,
pitchforks,
all things,
and crossbows and gas masks.
Now, one thing that I thought was interesting on that, because she goes to Selena, and of course Bruce is there, and they're all three now tied up in this thing. Bruce is already showing the characteristic that we'll see from Batman later on, where he's always trying to figure out the angle where people like Harvey Dent or the Joker, the redemption part, we can save them, we can help them, we can make them better, we can you know, fix whatever problem is. We're seeing a little bit of that with this episode, where Bruce is like, okay, I'm going to give Ivy money, I'll get the necklace back, we'll take the necklace back, and, you know, no harm, no foul, everything will be fine. And of course they walk in, and the guy who owns the necklace is now dead with an arrow through his face.
Face arrows.
And this and Selena being Selena, which really surprised me, she tosses the necklace and it breaks and reveals a key.
That's got to be the flimsiest necklace.
I know, right? Well, it's gotta be fake.
I was wondering why that emerald was so gosh darn big.
Ugh. Well, it's gotta hide the key. What do we think it's a key to? It looked like a skeleton key. It didn't look like a key. It wasn't a bus locker or safety deposit box.
Yeah, it looked like a closet key or something.
Yeah, or maybe one of those little boxes like a Hope Chest type of key. I don't know. Be interesting to see what it goes to.
Yeah,
the rest of the Goonies are going to team up and figure out what it's for.
Yeah, make their own Scooby-Doo gang.
That's right. But I
found it also funny. I forgot about this until now. When Barnes is in Arkham with straight jacket saying guilty.
Yeah.
If I recall, that's also what Harvey Dent says the first. Like, that's exactly the scene from when Harvey Dent is first arrested in the animated series. And he's taken to Arkham.
I hadn't thought about that. I think you're right. I'd have to look that up, but I think you're right.
So I pull up IMDb.
Yes.
This is just a little fun fact for you. I pull up IMDb when you talk about Gotham, because I don't watch the show and I kind of like to try and follow along with what's happening.
Right.
It says how many episodes everybody's been in. Selena Kyle's been in more episodes than Bruce Wayne. I just thought everybody wouldn't like to know that.
I can see that.
Well, she was part of the whole arc with
Fish
Mooney.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of Fish Mooney's lieutenants for a while. So
see, you can and have a Batman show without Batman.
She's prettier.
I mean,
yes.
So you know.
Last week,
go ahead,
do you have an actual thing about Gotham? Because I'm going to talk about an actor in Gotham.
Okay.
Go ahead. So you go ahead. You first.
Okay. Mine was about Gotham. And the Riddler cannot, for the life of him, figure out who killed his girlfriend.
Well, he thinks Butch did it.
Why does he think Butch did it?
Well, because...
I mean, of all the people, we haven't heard from Butch... Or seen Butch in weeks.
But remember where we left this, though. Nygma is responsible for Butch getting caught out as the guy who organized the Red Hood in order to be the hero. Nygma is the one who's responsible for Butch losing his place. And so, of course, he's got it out for Nygma. Nygma's automatically going to assume that Butch is out for revenge because of what Nygma did to Butch. It's a logical assumption to make.
Yeah,
I totally was right along there with him. I know why he's doing that. It makes total sense to me.
I know, it just seemed more like a device so that they can string out this Nygma penguin. Mm.
Oh, of
whatever.
Course it is. Of course it's a device. I mean, this show, for those of you who have not figured this out yet, this show is soaked in Handwavium. It has it is so much hand of the writer in every script. I mean, it's easier to point out where there's not hand of the writer moments. Really. Dustin.
Oh,
you
okay.
have something.
So, did you guys talk about Robin Lord Taylor talking about Gay Penguin?
Yeah, I saw that.
At the convention?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we talked about it much.
Well, apparently, one of the people at this convention asked him, Robin Lord Taylor was on a panel, and they're like, what do you think of all the people who are mad because Penguin in Gotham is gay and he's not canonically gay in the comic books?
Right.
And he was basically like, I think that they're homophobes, and I think that they're
Yeah, he went off
dicks.
On a tear,
yeah.
and basically... well, this is the very first time, and Tim, you can check me on this, Oswald has never been portrayed as homosexual, bisexual, non-straight, ambiguous, or anything.
He's always
the first time.
Loved the ladies.
And so it isn't canon, yeah. You know, but like Tim pointed out last week, nothing on this show is canon.
And like,
it's its own canon.
Look, if Bruce Wayne decided that he wanted to be Superman at this point, it would be completely in the keeping of this show. I mean, there's no they tossed out canon in episode one,
and that was
it's a multiverse. So hey, you know, in one multiverse or another, Penguin can be gay. Sure, no problem. This show, you know, you can throw anything you want against the wall in this show, and if it works for the fans, knock yourself out because you've only got a few episodes left before the show gets canceled.
Right.
And Robin Lord Taylor had 2 points when I read the article. Number one was that the show is like, where is this? Because why did nobody freaked out when in the first Batman movie, Joker is the one who killed the parents? So like, that's a big one there.
Right.
And the second one was like, he didn't even necessarily think that Penguin was like officially gay. If anybody had shown Penguin the kind of kindness that Nygma had, he probably would have attached in that same way. It wouldn't have mattered. It could have been he said it could have been Barbara. It could have been Butch. It could have been Fish Mooney. And he would have still had the same, might have still had the same reaction.
Right.
So, you know,
well,
I just thought that
and
was
the
an
other
interesting.
Thing, the other thing, too, that's kind of interesting on that part of it, the whole idea of Oswald coming out, even just to himself, when you compare that to Alex coming out over on Supergirl.
Oh, yeah.
And you look at how it's been written and how it's been portrayed and how it's been executed, Supergirl did it a whole lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gotham
is so clumsy on everything.
When we get to Supergirl, I totally turned the corner. Because last time I was here, I was saying, like, I feel like it's been rushed.
Yeah.
But this week's episode totally flipped me on that.
Yeah. So. Okay, and we will talk about that plus Flash, Arrow, and Legends tomorrow when the Rogues Gallery continues right after this.
We are Vengeance. We are the Night. We are Sci-Fi for Me.
Jedi, Sith, Tauntauns, no matter which side of the Force you claim, we are your go-to holocron for all the latest Star Wars news, rumors, and innuendo. Imperial Intelligence has got nothing on us. We've got your salacious crumbs every other Sunday at 6 p.m. Central U.S. exclusively on Sci-Fi for Me TV.
SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse. And may the Force be with you.
I'm meteorologist Brian Busby. If you're traveling to a convention this weekend, especially if you're a cosplayer, it helps to know what the weather's going to be like. Rain and fur don't mix very well now, do they? That's why every week, Sci-Fi for Me gives you the weather forecast for every city hosting a convention. Those we have on our list, anyway. And that's worldwide, not just in the United States. It's part of our commitment to bring you content you won't find anywhere else. Just click on the Conventions tab over at SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon, or find them on the web at AtomicCotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
If you unsubscribe to our podcasts, our legion is doomed. Now back to the Rogues Gallery on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Back in the Rogues Gallery, talking about the DC Comics television shows. We are on to Supergirl now. Before the break, we were talking about the comparison, the compare and contrast, as we did in English class, between the Penguin coming out and Alex coming out. Dustin, you said you turned a corner this week.
Well, because I have felt as they have had Alex slowly move towards the closet door, I felt it was rushed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel because she was, you know, kind of, because I could see it, the plot points happening in my head. Like, she's going to come out of the closet. Her and Maggie are going to get together. It's going to be a thing. They're going to be a couple. It's going to be. But then this week, she finally comes up, gets the courage to tell Kara that she is, you know, a lesbian, and or believes she
she thinks she might be.
Believes sure. she's a lesbian. And, yeah. and then she makes her move on Maggie, and Maggie is like, no, thank you. And and she's devastated. And that is such a real moment. That mm-hmm. first rejection is such a real moment. And it happens.
It hit me when I'm watching the scene where Kara is sitting on the park bench. They're out there on the Riverwalk, mm-hmm. and Alex is actually telling Kara for the first time. It felt like it had been written by somebody. Somebody's gone through this very mm-hmm. thing. Somebody has experienced this way, because it really did feel authentic. It felt mm-hmm. realistic. Of course, Greg Berlanti is gay. He's the showrunner. He did the story. He didn't do the script for mm-hmm. this particular episode, but you know, he's of course got the story beats. So somewhere in all of this, somebody has gone through this kind of thing mm-hmm. and has written this scene.
Right.
And that was the feeling that I got watching this whole thing. And you know, props to Kyler Lee for selling it. And then when Maggie turned around and goes, look, we're in completely different places. You're just a babe in the woods here. Yeah, for you know, mm-hmm. I can be your friend, but anything else would be taking advantage of you, basically. And it you're right. It felt very real.
They moved from, in I think a very, you know, and again to compare it to one of the most iconic coming outs in television, Willow on Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
It did that where in Willow and Tara moved in this tandem journey together, kind of discovering each other at the same time.
Right.
And that's what made it feel so real and poignant, because, you know, you always, when you have a first love, even, you know, everybody, anyone's first love, that's kind of how it is. You feel each other out and you realize these things about each other
mm-hmm.
in tandem, and it's magic, and that's what made that so good. And this is going to be even as good, because we're getting the other side of it. You know, I've right. made these discoveries about myself. You're the one who made me realize these things about myself. But for whatever reason, you don't want what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've put myself out on this limb that's broken out from underneath me, and now I don't know where I'm going to fall to.
Right.
It was good. It was very good.
As opposed to the other part of the story.
Which one? Are we talking about Mon-El, or are we talking about Guardian?
I liked the Guardian part. The Mon-El part was meh, but...
Okay.
I thought to James and Wynn teaming up to be, you know, awesome. It was pretty good.
Well, James and Wynn teaming up, yeah, okay, fine. I don't see the necessity for James Olsen to be the Guardian anyway.
Yeah.
Would you feel less upset if he wasn't named James Olsen?
Well, because there are certain characters, if you're showing any kind of respect to the comic book, the Guardian, the guy who is the Guardian, has already been on this show. He was played by Eddie McClintock last season. Yeah. And he's not the Guardian. And maybe at some point we get something in Cadmus, because Cadmus this year doesn't look a thing like Cadmus as the Marines described it while they were interrogating John Jones. Because if anybody will remember, back in season one, we had an official government agency, Cadmus. And now suddenly there's this underground rogue terrorist organization, Cadmus, and nobody's putting two and two together and go, wait a minute, doesn't the government have an agency named Cadmus? It's almost like they're completely ignoring that part of the first season. And then you've got...
Flashpoint question mark?
Yes, what?
I said flashpoint question mark?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know, because, well, see, that's such a tricky thing, because Earth 2 Harrison Wells
was not affected.
Affected by Flashpoint. It was just maybe, Flash's Earth.
Maybe Cadmus, the secret underground agency, is secretly being run by Cadmus, the military.
It's a double secret.
It's a double blind.
I totally missed that, actually, Jason. But I think what they're doing, like, I think it was extremely symbolic when James Olsen's camera was broken.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that essentially told me we're not seeing, this is no longer the character that you, his mm-hmm. name is the same. Well, right. This is not going to be that character any longer.
Right. We've talked about it from the beginning. He wasn't the right character anyway.
I like that his suit was partially made of lead lined, so that Supergirl can't see who it was.
Yeah. Even though I'm still like, I want some color in it. I want it to be the blue and yellow.
Although that doesn't work for me either, because the whole time, like, because Wynn is talking in his ear, not from some bunker hundreds of miles away.
Yeah, he's in a van.
From a van down the street.
Either way, yeah.
Like, Supergirl has super hearing. Well, she's used it as a superpower on this show before.
To be fair, though, she's not listening.
Attention,
you know, she's not paying
attention.
She's
learned to not pay attention to the thing she doesn't need to pay attention.
Well, here's the other thing that bothered me on this particular episode was the preachy climate change aspects of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, wherever you fall on global warming, climate change, whatever,
it's real.
The writing on this particular episode with regard to that aspect of the characters was so clumsy and so clunky and so, here, let me beat you over the head, the conservative Republican guy is the bad guy.
But
he's also saying that as he's being...
He's turning into a literal monster.
But the guy that he had the problem with, the business guy, is not written fairly at all. He's portrayed
person. He had two lines. Like, and they weren't even, in my opinion, they weren't even particularly that odious. I don't even remember what he said. Like, it was...
You didn't play the game, and you're not going to get your job back.
Yeah, the whole thing just felt a little overdone.
I would disagree, because they made the environmental guy like he took his beliefs to such an extreme level.
Right.
I think that was fine.
Well, and I didn't like the fact that they blew him up either. I mean, that's Tim Burton superhero 101. You kill the villain at the end of the movie. You know, now what happens? We don't get Parasite again, or what?
Well, you know, I think I don't know.
Ooh. I mean,
there's bits of him that'll regrow or something.
Yeah, he can go. Yeah. Maybe. He can go Parasite somebody else.
A little blobby part fell in a place he'll regrow. So.
The secret of the ooze.
Yeah.
Didn't right. anybody else like the tribute to John Carpenter's The Thing?
I liked that. I thought that
I
was cool.
I honestly didn't notice it until somebody pointed it out.
Oh, okay.
So long since I've seen it.
Well, not only that, but, you know, X-Files has done it. You know, X-Files did their whole, you know, up in the Arctic mystery thing, and you know, yeah, John Carpenter's thing, of course, the original thing.
I was honestly hoping it was a wolf reference to, you know, their animal companion in Young Justice.
Yeah.
I was hoping it was that. I didn't get that it was a thing reference until somebody pointed it out.
Well, you're young yet.
So,
what? Say your piece. What are you thinking?
Is Mon-El going to become Cyborg Superman?
No.
Is that where they're going?
No. No. He is not going to be Cyborg Superman. It is either going to be, because there was an interview with David Harewood, who plays John Jones, who is pretending to be Hank Henshaw.
Right.
Right? David Harewood also has played in the flashbacks the original Hank Henshaw. And he's given hints that Hank Henshaw might not be actually totally fully dead.
He's just very near.
He's mostly dead. Now, I think it was either last week or the week before, I posited the theory that Dean Cain would come back as Cyborg Superman.
Jeremiah. I was hoping to be Dean Cain.
I would love that. That would be delighted.
That would be poetic. But given what Harewood has said, now there's a possibility, because we've seen in the promo, in a promo for maybe I think next week, where Hank is going after Supergirl and attacking her. And so now there's a question, well, is that John Jones? And he's affected by the blood transfusion from McGann?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that actually Hank Henshaw? And he's got whatever cyborg parts and we don't see him yet. So either Cyborg Superman would be Jeremiah or would be the real Hank Henshaw.
So what do we think is going to happen to poor old Mon-El? Poor old dumb old Mon-El.
Yeah.
If we're lucky, they put him on a bus.
We can only hope.
Yeah.
It comes back to the same problem I mentioned last week. The show really feels overstuffed to me right
Very
now.
Much so this yeah. week, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so when you have the great stuff, you know, you have the really good writing with Alex, it almost, I mean, you're lucky that stands out because it's so well done, because there's so much happening. This whole season just feels there's too much happening, which is a shame because I like the show. But I mean, if Mon-El were if we were to never see Mon-El again, I wouldn't care, and that's not a good thing when you're like, all right, well, bye.
He has a pleasing face and torso. If he disappeared, I'd be like, there goes that face.
If he were a stronger character,
nah.
If he actually
had
a character, but if he were a stronger character, I could see where they would be trying to set him up for a spinoff. But he's not that good of a character, and he's not written well enough that you could do that for him. So you're right. He doesn't really serve any purpose on this show at this point.
So he can go be a muscle mob for Gotham.
Yeah, he's Rocky.
Blood transfusion.
The last two.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that.
Okay.
So if she's a white Martian,
uh-huh,
disguised as a green Martian,
uh-huh,
can't she just she can shapeshift.
Uh-huh.
They both can. Can't she just shapeshift her blood to match his? And so she doesn't give him white Martian blood, she gives him green Martian blood.
How can they even be compatible at all?
I think I.
Or does her blood stay the same no matter what form she's in?
All right, in the comic book, the difference between white Martians and the green Martians is not biological.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It's psychological. The way that the two aspects of the culture are. Just wired differently mentally. One is the conqueror, one is the creator. And so, unless this show takes a different route with it, now in the comic they generally portray the two of them as appearing differently, but in terms of physically, they're actually biologically the same.
Yeah,
and doesn't
but they're shapeshifters, so it, they basically culturally have picked form.
So it's basically an ethnicity thing where you have
right.
you know, like whites and blacks and Asians. We could all give each other blood, but we all look different.
Right, and if I remember from my Young Justice, I don't know if this is the same as the comic, McGann spends so much time pretending to be a Green Martian that she becomes one.
That's not true in the comics, but...
But Young Justice does play with that a little bit.
Yeah, because I remember specifically the episode where they did something in her mind. They went into McGann's mind, and somebody's like, I'm going to force you to show your true self. And she didn't change from the green. She changed from her human appearance into the Green Martian appearance.
No. She wasn't forced. She wasn't forced.
No,
because
there was,
she was forced.
There was, it was, it was Simon. There was, because they were all trapped in there.
Yeah.
And I remember the episode you're talking about. They were all trapped in there. And
after the White Martian reveal, or she was revealed to be a White Martian.
Yeah.
And then they go in and I'm going to turn you back into who you really are. And she became Miss Martian, the green version. Mm-hmm. And she said, this is who I really am.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's possible. I just don't know. I don't know if the shape-shifting works on the molecular level that far deep down. Mm. I don't know. That is certainly something to look at. Yes, Tim.
Here's the fun self thing that they probably won't do it, but the reason that there's even white and green Martians in the first place is because the Guardians of the Galaxy, the Green Lantern Corps guys,
the Guardians of Oa,
Guardians of the Universe.
Thank you. Yeah, amazing intercompany crossover. The Guardians of the Universe were viewed the original Martian species as being too dangerous.
Yep.
So they split them and gave them that fear of fire.
Yeah, not only that, but then they created the Vulcans, which used fire to try to keep them in line.
Yeah, so it's. I mean, if they wanted to, they could actually sneak in a Green Lantern reference that could be a pretty big deal. They probably won't. And as stuffed as this season is, I could actually see them going, oh, look, and here's the Green Lantern Corps.
Well, and given that they've added, they've got Susan Williams, the reporter over on Arrow, and she's a Green Lantern character, they're not above that. It wouldn't surprise me. They could very well do something with the Guardians of Oa, would not have anything Green Lantern connected to it. Maybe I don't know how well they could do that, but
I don't.
It should be Sapphire
Lanterns,
if anything.
Guardians without giving a Green Lantern thing. I mean, that would just be that would be pointless. I mean, there would be no point to it.
Well, it is DC.
Yes, but the TV show, despite the fact that it's overstuffed, the TV shows and Arrow is, flashback crazy. The TV shows generally get it right. So,
pardon me, guys. So speaking of flashbacks, let's skip over to Arrow for a second, because the flashbacks, I want to get to that for just a second. Dolph Lundgren as Konstantin Kovar.
I will break you.
He hasn't said it yet.
Red Star's father, yeah.
He hasn't said it yet. He needs to say it. Mm-hmm. I want him to say it. It's because people, I want him to do the thing with the thing, like Dustin says.
Do what I expect from you.
That's right.
You can't do anything else. No, you have to do it.
Come on, it's Dolph Lundgren.
Do it.
And these shows, the Arrowverse, are full of Easter eggs like that. They have to do something with that.
Say, I have the power, or something.
Let's like window.
That would be too deep.
The power of Grayskull.
Well, it's like when Linda Carter was President Wonder Woman over a couple of weeks ago. You should see my other jet. You know, it's those winks that we enjoy. We like those. And Dolph Lundgren's doing a pretty good job over here on this show. Oddly enough, know, he's
well. Dolph Lundgren is actually a pretty good actor when he's given a chance. It's that odd thing. It's like if you ever saw Sylvester Stallone in Copland.
Yes.
And you suddenly realize Sylvester Stallone is actually a really talented actor, but he is always playing parts where he's never given a chance to be an actor. He's just playing, you know, Rocky or, well, I mean, he does some in Rocky.
Oscar,
but I mean, you know,
nominated screenwriter.
It's the same thing with Lundgren. He's actually a really smart guy.
Molecular biology.
But still, you know, so it's fun to watch him over there.
The rest of the episode, however, it's okay. How many of you watched Arrow this week?
I did.
Jeff, did you see it?
I did not.
No. It was all right. It introduces Vigilante officially, and it gives us more of the same moral ambiguity. Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing?
Yada, yada. Yeah.
It's
season 5, Ollie. Come on.
Well, see, the thing about it is, and I was reading an article the other day. Somebody was talking about the fact that the one of the problems with the Arrowverse, and it's more pronounced over on Arrow, is that your main characters never learn anything.
I will disagree a little bit because I think that's true for Arrow. I'm not convinced that it's true for Legends of Tomorrow. And Flash, I'm still kind of thinking about it. But
well, now yeah. Barry has learned. We got done with the time travel tampering thing.
We don't time travel.
Save
your mom.
But over on Arrow, I mean, Ollie's shown a little bit of growth because we've seen in his conversations with Diggle the last couple of episodes, he's actually in a different place than he was in the first season where he's having the same kind of conversations with Diggle. But I still haven't quite figured out if I like what they're doing with this season or not, trying to get more of the season one vibe back. I don't know. I'm still up in the air with it. I don't know. Not sure.
I just don't really like care.
Has Arrow just run its course, guys?
I think it has. I think we may get a sixth season out of it, maybe, but I don't think it'll go past that if it does. Interesting thing, though, speaking of Young Justice, the reveal at the end of this episode that Artemis is working for Prometheus.
Yes, that is actually more of a comic thing than a Young Justice thing, because they, as much as they stated that they were using the Young Justice version, the comic book version is actually a villain. So,
well,
Justice one was always the hero.
Well, no, she was an infiltrator in Young Justice at the very beginning.
She was not.
Yeah, she was. She was a spy. Yes, she was a spy, and she was not working for. She was not. What? You're shaking your head at me.
The infiltrator. She wasn't an infiltrator. Green Arrow put her on there just to keep her away from her parents, who were villains.
Why did I get that wrong?
Artemis was sisters with Cheshire. And
yeah,
daughter.
Artemis.
It was,
yeah, okay.
Roy, that was the infiltrator.
All right. See, I do this every now and then again.
Yes,
so
was the bad guy.
So people will look smarter than me sometimes.
No, I'm very excited about season 3 of Young Justice.
So.
I think it's going to be nice.
It depends. It's one of those shows that I had a lot of problems with, but I also liked a lot. So, I mean, like I was on the middle ground. Like, there was a lot of stuff that I had problems with, but there was a lot of stuff that I liked. So I was always, like, apprehensive each episode of, oh boy, is this going to be something I'm going to hate, or is this going to be something I'm going to enjoy? Which, towards the end, it was more of the hate. So, I don't know.
I liked the weird aliens at the end of that show. I don't remember
that part was fine. It was the part where it was just
You mean the Reach?
The ending Yeah, the ending was, I think, too dark for a kid's show.
Well,
I thought
Who said Young Justice was a kid's show?
The fact that it's on Cartoon Network.
No, Young Justice was not a kid's show.
Stop! You cannot say like
I had 10-year-old neighbors that were watching it.
Well, but it wasn't. Yeah, and you may have had people younger watching it, but it was not.
It was not
written for 10-year-olds. Yeah.
I felt like
it wasn't specifically marketed for them either.
Right. No, it wasn't. And I tell you right now, it's not the 10-year-olds that got it to come back.
Mm-hmm. No. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that that's just how I felt. Like this, I mean, it was a kid's show to me when it was airing, and so. Like, if they continue this route for season 3, if they make it dark for season 3, then I'm not gonna. It's gonna be on Netflix, so I'm gonna be like, oh, okay, this is fine. But for what the show was when it was airing, I was not satisfied, especially because they left a lot of stuff hanging, and I don't really like that when they do that on a season closer because, you know,
the assumption is there's gonna be another season, and we finally get it. After how many years?
Five, I
think. Yeah. So,
and we get those missing 5 years, hopefully. The ones that were missing in between 1 and 2.
Yeah, the time skip was not, I was not a fan of that.
Well, I don't know, because season 2 ended with Darkseid, so I would assume that season 3 is going to pick up right there.
Mm-hmm. I would hope.
Yep.
It's however many years later. It's a totally different cast of characters.
Yeah. All right. So okay, we skipped over Flash. Let's go back to Flash. Shade, the smoke monster from Lost, is running amok in Star City. And
Star City.
Do what?
He said he was running amok in Star City.
Star City,
yeah.
Central City.
It's,
sorry,
it's Central City.
Central City, dude.
See, I make you look smarter than I am. That's what I do. So smoke monster is running around in Central City. Caitlin reveals to Cisco that she's now got Killer Frost powers.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And he vibes their future. And sees them fighting each other, fully in costume.
And with the puffy yellow vest.
Yes,
yay.
Vibe versus Killer Frost. Yeah. Now, what are the possibilities that was either A, an actual battle, or B, a training simulation that's taken out of context?
Oh,
yeah.
Or C, one of them is from a different Earth.
They're both dead on Earth too, so I doubt it.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, Cisco's done this before, where he sees something, and you make an assumption based on the very limited piece that he sees, and it turns out it doesn't quite go exactly the way he saw it.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like that, so Raven.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
Yes. That's the entire show of That's So Raven. I can't believe they're bringing. Well, I can believe they're bringing it back because everything's coming back. Did you see? Is it Warner Brothers just bought Machinima? Warner Brothers just bought Machinima.
What's Machinima?
Machinima is the YouTube network. They do a lot of gaming stuff, and they're the ones that are bringing back Knight Rider, as a web series.
Well, okay,
yeah, that broke.
Machiniminer.
That broke today. Machinima.
I don't know what that is. I still don't even know.
Legends of Tomorrow. Well, what do we think of the Flash? Is Flash okay?
I like Savitar's design a lot.
Yeah.
I knew they definitely weren't going for the comics one for obvious reasons. So, I really like it. And I really like the fact that he's, like, moving so fast that really nobody can see him, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, and then, of course, we've got Wally in a cocoon now. He's going to come out as Kid Flash.
Yeah, an Inhuman.
Bum, bum, bum.
I mean...
I liked Savitar. I'm fine with another speedster. But I have to say that I was disappointed that we have now named a villain Shade, and yet we've got this great comic book version of the Shade, which we've now basically kind of put off limits because we've named another villain the Shade.
Well, I don't think they can use him. I don't think they have the ability, because I think the original guy that created him isn't letting DC use its stuff anymore.
Well, the shade from the Starman series.
That's what we're talking about.
Is a pre-existing character. DC owns the character.
Okay.
That character might have been an early Barry Allen villain or Green Lantern. It was Silver Age. He's a Silver Age villain. So the modern incarnation, the sort of villain with a heart of gold version, yeah. Robinson gave that characterization, but DC owns the character.
Okay. I thought he owned that version, because I know that there's a version that's, basically, monster, shadow monster that eats everything, and then there's that version, and then there's the Shade, the changing thing that has the madness jacket, so there's three.
The first Shade showed up in 1940s. He was in Flash, a story called The Man Who Commanded the Night, written by Gardner Fox, illustrated by Hal Sharp. So
there
he's,
you go. Yeah,
he's
that,
a he's
that's
a
the
Flash.
Original version of the character.
That's the Golden Age version, who also was the Silver Age version. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if he's a Flash villain, then I do hope they bring him back as, the original one, and do like the comics are doing right now and say that the Smoke Monster is like a remnant of the Dark Force, whatever. Because that's what they're doing.
Oddly enough, I'm surprised that... part of me has been surprised since early on with the DC TV shows that nobody actually sat there and tried to get Starman as one of the CW shows, because it's actually a show that would fit really, really well. And give you these really great villain characters to play off of, because the Robinson Starman's Rogues Gallery is some great legacy characters that fans would love. But he's also a guy who doesn't run around in a superhero costume.
Yeah, he's got the sweet yellow jacket and the goggles.
Yeah. But
I do love
that. Oddly enough, we've never had a film adaptation of him. We've had Stargirl.
I do want to slap James Robinson.
Wait a minute.
Andy,
the goggles, well, Sandman had goggles too. They were talking about Hourman. They were developing an Hourman series at one point. And he showed up as part of the JSA on Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, which is actually a better fit for him than having a series of his own. The problem with a series of his own is that anytime I think of that, I think of... Remember the terrible syndicated show Nightman?
Oh, yes.
Okay, for whatever reason, just the premise of Hourman just doesn't feel... It feels like a bad 90s syndicated show. Even though I like the character just fine when he's a part of a team.
Right.
He's part of the JSA. He's fine. But on his own, it just feels like bad 90s syndicated superhero show with terrible costumes and ridiculous writing. And it follows Silk Stockings on whatever channel that was.
that was on USA, wasn't it?
Mm.
Silk Stockings were on USA. Yeah. Alright. Okay, so speaking of Legends of Tomorrow, we go back to the Old West.
Yeah, with Jonah Hex.
Wah, wah, wah. Jonah Hex going after Jeff Fahey. It's fun to see Jeff Fahey as a villain again. He should have channeled Tyree from Silverado, mm-hmm. just a little bit. Gives a little bit more crazy. But it was fun to see him in a cowboy hat and a western. And we've got the entry point for Ray Palmer's new suit. Because we have Time Pirate going back to a mine that's full of dwarf star alloy ore. And the time aberration is that Jeff Fahey's character Turnbull blows up a bridge and takes over the entire western segment of the United States past the Rocky Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got to be stopped. And
and
steel, more powerful than a locomotive. And nobody said it. Nobody said it.
Well, possibly because even the writers had to know that that scene just didn't work.
Oh, it's a cool scene.
It's a cool scene, but all I kept thinking was there should be a giant metal man flying through the air.
Well,
because
remember,
physics don't work that way, kids.
Yeah, but remember what I said at the very beginning of this season. They have fully embraced the goofballery of the premise of this show.
I know, but it's just I was watching that going, okay, that's a cool scene, but I completely don't believe it.
But he's more powerful than a locomotive because he's the Man of Steel.
Yeah,
I mean, it was so obvious.
There was another joke about well, there was a joke on Supergirl whenever Wynn was testing Mon-El's powers, and he's like, "Yep, you can leap tall buildings with a single bound."
Yeah, I remember that.
But you can't fly like her.
Yeah. Which actually was the original characteristic of the Superman character. He didn't fly when he started.
Yeah, but then the animators were like, "No, we're not doing that."
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they
the
made
flying
him fly.
Came later. So what do we think about Legends Tomorrow? The Western. We got Jonah Hex back. We've got Mick Rory able to speak in metaphor and admitting, "I know what a metaphor is. Don't tell anyone." Mick always gets the bad lines.
It is a goofball show.
It is.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Mm-hmm. That's how I felt.
I think, you know, I mean, there's a certain amount of, especially with the historical stuff, you just kind of have to, you know,
let it be.
You know what? Because it's there's some oversimplification that happens. It just, you know, it's going to happen. But it's you just smile and nod and enjoy the. It's the strength of the show is the character interaction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that part, you know, is always fun. Mm-hmm. So
I just can't wait to see Legion of Doom like stuff. That's what I'm waiting for.
Well, and it looks like that's actually not going to happen until after Invasion now.
Yeah, but still.
Which I am looking forward to Invasion.
But
that is going to be so much fun. Now, next week, do we have any shows next week because of Thanksgiving? Do we have Supergirl?
We have Flash.
Do we have Supergirl?
And we have Kevin Smith directed Flash.
Oh, is that next week? Kevin Smith's Flash is next week.
The one with Killer Frost.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So that's next week. Do we have Supergirl? Do we have Gotham?
Supergirl is next week. And
okay.
I think we have Legends of Tomorrow next week.
We have Gotham next week.
No, we don't have Legends of Tomorrow.
We don't have Legends of Tomorrow because Thursday is Thanksgiving. I don't know. Do we have. I don't know if we have an Arrow or not.
Next year.
That's right. Yes. Because in January, Legends of Tomorrow was moving to Tuesdays.
Right after Flash.
And some people see this as a desperation move to try to get their numbers up using the Flash as a better lead-in, which might
I find it easier, like, on my schedule.
Do what?
I said I personally find it easier on my schedule. I have a hard time getting shows in on Thursday nights, so.
Well, and I wonder if that could also be. Because originally iZombie was going to be in that slot, so I guess that means iZombie will be on Thursdays then.
I think they said that it was coming back in February.
Yeah, because iZombie was going to be back. So Legends of Tomorrow will be there until they wrap up, and then iZombie will be there after that.
Okay.
So we don't have very many Legends episodes left. But that opens up Thursday night for another superhero show? Maybe?
Maybe. They were thinking a show where
at the end of each episode, one of the characters who has not developed at all gets on a bus and leaves town.
To the next show. Yes! They said something, I read on CBR, that they were thinking of
possibly doing the Death-Defying Dr. Mirage as a show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Image Comics?
I don't think so. I think
it's
that was
not,
a...
Yeah, but that's not a DC property.
Yeah. No, it's maybe a third party.
Dark Horse?
I just can't remember.
It's either Dark Horse or Image. I can't remember. But I saw that earlier this week. But that's...
Honestly, I don't know.
Valiant. It could be Valiant. I don't know. Well, that'll be interesting to see how that does. Because, you know, up until now, you know, our comic book properties have all mostly been DC or Marvel related. Because Lucifer is Vertigo, iZombie is Vertigo. You know, all of the DC heroes, of course, you know, Gotham, Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, all DC. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Marvel. All the Netflix shows are Marvel. It's going to be nice to see other imprints start to get their shows on the air, because Lock and Key didn't happen. Powers didn't last but two seasons. We've got Christopher Maloney got cast as the lead in Happy. Okay, Valiant. But we got Chris Maloney is going to be playing the lead on Happy, which is going to be Sci-Fi's adaptation of the Grant Morrison comic. We've got Walking Dead over on AMC. And Walking Dead was what? Who published Walking Dead?
Image.
Okay.
You guys, I have fallen down a Google hole.
Uh-oh.
And I have discovered, because I wanted to find out, because this was back when we were talking about The Flash, I wanted to find out if she really did, Killer Frost really did become a hero, because I believe that's the case. She's been a hero for about 15 years in the comics, but I didn't know, so I wanted to find out. But I also found out that she is a supporting character on the web show Superhero Girls that DC does, where her name is just Frost.
Oh, yeah?
And so that made me go, oh, I wonder what the new superhero dolls, girl dolls, are going to be for next year, because I like to know that sort of thing. And they're going to have a Starfire, and she's adorable,
really?
And I might have to buy her. Because
the Teen Titans Go version of Starfire?
No. She actually looks much
DC
better.
DC Superhero Girls.
Superhero Girls, which I have not watched, but I hear is delightful.
It's adorable. It is definitely not for me, like, written for my age group. So, like, whatever, if you guys keep that in mind if you watch it. But it is pretty adorable.
Written for 10-year-olds, maybe?
Yeah. Well, I own already, we bought the Supergirl doll.
Yeah,
because I justify it that my children, especially my girls, like that show, but she's up on a shelf where they don't touch her. And I've been really fighting not buying any more of them. For those of you who don't know, I collect dolls and action figures, and it takes up a good deal of my home.
And in some cases, you use them to recreate scenes from TV shows.
Oh, that's another life. That was another life.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks very much for joining us. If you've got thoughts and comments on any of the DC shows that you want to share with us, you can send those to roguesgallery@scififorme.com. Next week, are we gonna do a show next week since we got Thanksgiving and stuff, or are we going to take off next week?
I won't be in town.
Okay.
I'm up for whatever.
Okay. All right. We'll figure something out then, and we will let you know by social media. We'll put on Facebook and Twitter. And that's also where you can leave comments for us if you don't want to send us an email. And, of course, we do invite you to check out our other podcasts over at podcast.com or on iTunes, and the regular news, all the news that is news, over at scififorme.com. I want to thank our panel this evening, Catherine Sanders.
Bye.
Dave Margosian and Ann Labs.
Back on the bus, y'all.
Good night.
And Tim Harvey.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Jeff Hackworth.
Bye-bye.
And here in studio, Dustin Adair.
I will accept gifts of Superhero Girls dolls.
And I am Jason Ott. I am getting on the bus. We will be back with another episode of the Rogues Gallery soon.
This has been a presentation of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Copyright 2016 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.